Welcome to the IndieB Sunday Show with me, Chris Stain. First up, scam alert. Fraudsters have used AI to create an advertisement that keeps popping up on YouTube videos of a BizNews interview between Ms. Helen Ziller and myself punting an investment opportunity that is too good to be true. It is too good to be true. It is fake. Please don't spend your money on it. You will lose it all. And for future reference, I would never endorse any kind of investment. Now over to the heart of darkness that is being laid bare at the Matlango Commission. We speak to former police officer Willem Els, who is with the Institute for Security Studies. Welcome, Willem.
Good afternoon, Chris.
Willem, you've been there for 2 weeks, and yet a great deal of evidence has been laid, and yet in certain quarters, there are people asking, where is the evidence? What do you say?
Yeah, Chris. Unfortunately, you see, it seems that that some people are confusing the commission with a court of law, and it can't be further removed from each other. We must just look at the Matlango Commission and what its purpose is. You know, if you firstly look at the Matlango Commission seeks to establish factual findings. It exposes wrongdoing, and also it makes recommendation for policy, law reform, and accountability measures. And that can be disciplinary actions or even prosecution. So that is what they are doing. And, from day one, the first statement that was submitted was under oath, so that is also regarded as evidence. And also all the annexures that were attached to that statement, it's also evidence. But we must now look at the rules of evidence for the Matlango Commission, for this commission. It is not bound to strict law of evidence. For instance, you can use hearsay evidence may be accepted if relevant. And that is completely opposite to or contrary to what you find in a court of law. It can proactively summon documents, subpoenas, witnesses, request classified records, commission forensic audits, and or consult experts as part of the corroboration of this evidence. Cross-referencing of testimony will be with documents, the recordings, phone records, or even financial trace. Verification can also be done by independent investigations commissioned by the commission, and also forensic audits and can be done or commissioned, and also experts panels can be constituted, and they can then inform the commission. So what we see, the standard of proof that we're looking at, contrary to a court of law where you have to prove beyond reasonable doubt, a balance of probabilities or a reasoned belief is sufficient for recommendations within this commission. So I think that is a backdrop of which we have to look at what is happening there, also look at the evidence and the testimonies that are being done before the commission.
Thank you for explaining that, Willem. Now, may we look at the highlights of the testimony given thus far. Let us start with Denel Mokonazi.
Yeah, I think if you look at the first 3 days that he was in the box, in the dock, first of all, he seemed to be very well prepared. He was really confident. He was a good orator. He was not intimidated by the whole situation, and he went step by step. He was led through his affidavit. And I think he managed to clear a lot of things. He also filled in and provided clarity whenever there were questions asked by the commissioners themselves. He was really answering them well. So I think overall, if you look at his appearance there and the posture that he had there, it was very positive. Even though he was under tremendous pressure, being the first witness in this trial. So what we saw there is that what he actually said in his press conference, he started to bring evidence to that. He started to table some of the screen grabs, the other documentations, documentary proof. He also started to hand it in some of the cell phone data that was recovered, etc., etc. So he slowly but surely he was led through his testimony, and he started to build a case in order to inform the commission of inquiry about why, where he's coming from, what happened, what prompted him to do whatever he did. But also, we will see that there are questions that he actually started to answer, and that is, the first place, he made an allegation on the minister interfering, political interference, and then he started to venture into that, explaining his perception of how he perceived it, and also the different steps that he went through. You know, many people in the beginning said, yeah, but he should have followed the right channels and so on. And then he went through those channels that he followed. I mean, he even appeared before the parliamentary committee for that. And we saw that he said that there was no feedback from them. There was no action from them after that. That actually prompted his further actions. So the question that also was raised there was, did the minister venture out of his lane? Did the minister move into the lane of the operational or the police domain, or did he do? And that was a question that popped up throughout the four witnesses that have been there so far. And I think there's quite a good understanding from their perspective. We must remember it's early days, because this commission is divided into three phases. The first phase will be this side of Mkhwanazi that will put their case. They will then table all their evidence. Then it will be the turn of the commissioner of, or sorry, the minister, and the minister will come and explain, and he will put forward his case, and then Mkhwanazi will be called back, and then he will have to answer some more further questions. That will be sort of the cross examination, and it's also part of the verification and the clarification to the commissioners. So that is what Mkhwanazi did. I think he did a good job in what he was doing. Then if we look at the second witness of National Commissioner Masomola, we could see that he was under a lot of pressure when he came in. He was also dancing around some of the questions. He was a bit uncertain. He didn't come over as confident as, for instance, Mkhwanazi did. But when he was put into the corner and put on the spot, he started to answer the questions more directly. And it is on one side, it's understandable, because remember, whatever happened here, it was a possible career-ending decision that was made for both him and Mkhwanazi. And that is why they were hesitant in going through this way. But at the end of the day, the commissioner, national commissioner, then actually cleared the way to explain. Firstly, it went into the instruction from the minister. Was it legal? Was it not legal? Did it venture onto his field? Did it not venture on his field? Was the minister within his lane when he did that, or did he overstep? So it went through that, and he was adamant that according to his perception and also the advice that he got from a legal perspective, that the minister was at the wrong, and that is why he pushed back. He also, what he did is he tried to be politically correct in moving around, that he came up with a possible solution on how to do it in a phased way without directly adhering to this instruction. Because remember, like I said, if you fail to adhere to a legal instruction, that's career ending. And then it went onto the police structures, discipline, the hierarchy in the police, also where he himself is positioned, where General Mkhwanazi is, but also where General Sibiya is, and that gave us some clarity on the hierarchical flow of where they stand. And then they went into the disciplinary code, and there I think he made his case that General Sibiya reports to him directly, not to the minister. And the letter that was sent out by Sibiya that was contrary to his instruction, and he regarded that as disobeying his orders, because at the end of the day, General Sibiya, as the Deputy National Commissioner, he's got nothing to do with the minister. The line of command from political level to the operational level is through the National Commissioner. And that came out very clear in this evidence. And what was also discussed in quite in depth was, you know, the timing of the letter that the minister sent out. That letter was signed on, I think, the 28th of December in 2024. Now, that is a dead period in any organization. Nothing happens then. And, you know, everything dies down just before Christmas. And then a week or two after New Year, it revives and we get picks up steam. So that begs the question: why did what was timing for that letter? And then also the other thing is the general mentioned that he was on leave, and the minister signed his leave. So why did the minister wait for him to be on leave before he sent out that letter? And he asked for immediate action. Mm. So those are just the questions that were raised by Masemola, and hopefully there will be some recommendations and maybe further interrogation of that by the commission. So that was in the highlights of Masemola's testimony. And then if you go back to the next one, then they brought in General Van Rooyen. Now, she is one of the section heads at the legal services of the police. She is, she's got more than 40 years experience, and she's also responsible for policies and all the things that falls into this domain that this commission, or the reasons for this commission, falls in. And she was very direct. She was a legal eagle. She came out very direct. She was... she doesn't hold back. She went through the factual evidence of what happened and how it's supposed to be, and also the legislation. And when asked whether she believed that the instruction from the minister to the National Commission was legal, she was very adamant that it was not. So that was a game changer there, because up till now it was the perception of office of police officers, of the media, of everybody else, and here the legal representative that was supposed to advise him before. Because remember, if you are a national commissioner, you will not venture into something like this if you don't bring in your legal advisors and make sure that you are 100% on the right track and within your rights in doing so before you venture onto this this thing, like what happened now with General Mokwanazi and Masemola. So she was that was one of the things that she was very adamant with. And then also she reaffirmed, and we saw that how the commission is corroborating already what Mokwanazi said and what Masemola said about especially Sibiya and the letter and the line of command and everything. She was adamant that he was out of line and he did not follow standing orders. Now in the police, different to the, apart from the legislation, you've got standing orders. Now, standing orders is like the Bible of the policeman. You've got different standing orders. Standing orders for financial, standing orders for transport, standing orders for discipline. And when asked about that, she was adamant that, according to her, that General Sibiya overstepped the mark and he did not follow due process. So she cleared that up to a great extent, and she was quite questioned quite in depth by the commissioners. They kept her on the spot. So that was good.
I think let's just remind our viewers what the core allegations are and what was in that letter.
Okay, yeah. Well, the core allegations in the first place was that there was a instruction by the minister to the national commissioner to disband the political killing stars team, and with immediate effect. And his reason that he gave there is that it did not add any value, and it was not relevant anymore. But he did not, according to Masemola and Mokwanazi, he did not consult them in any way. The first thing they heard was when they received that letter about that. Secondly, what it said, there must be no further appointments at the crime intelligence sector or division. And then thirdly, he wanted to have an update on border security and border control. Mm. There's quite a few things that we can read in that, let's leave it there for today, because it's only speculations. So, and then what happened was there was a pushback from the National Commissioner, especially from General Mokwanazi, not to disband it. And then at the end of the day, what happened, the letter that we referred to that was sent out and signed according to Mkhwanazi and Masemola illegally, was the letter of General Sibiya that instructed them to cease all activities. But also the center of this whole thing is to return 121 case dockets that were under investigation and bring them to Pretoria. And according to the evidence, for more than 3 months, those dockets were at head office, where there was no work done on them, no further investigations, et cetera, et cetera. And some of these dockets, there were already warrants of arrest that were issued by court. And then there was a pushback from the acting minister at some stage when Masemola instructed that those dockets must be returned to KwaZulu-Natal. And even the president, according to news reports, reacted to that and were not happy with that. But we must just understand that the case dockets has got nothing to do with a political or with a minister. That is an operational thing, and it's also not anything to do with this commission. The case docket is the domain of the police. They have to investigate the case docket. They do that by law, and they have to build the prima facie case. Should they then build the prima facie case and it is ready for prosecution, normally it goes up to the NPA. There they decide whether they've got a case here and whether they're going to prosecute. So it is completely out of the legal domain.
I just want to take you to the evidence then given by the NPA's Advocate Harrison.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was quite interesting. And Advocate Harrison is the head of the NPA for KwaZulu-Natal. And let's start with a response when she was asked whether she was informed about the closure. She said no, she thought it was fake news. Because nobody spoke to her, she was not informed, she was not called in, and so that was her response. But she built up where she looked at all the different allegations and things and how, and she was also building the whole concept of how what is very important, prosecution guided investigation that was the norm with the STARS team and why it was so successful. When she was asked about the allegations of General Mkhwanazi about the prosecutors and the bail cases and where he made those allegations, she in depth went into her database and she said that they did an investigation there and they couldn't find any fault there. So that is just maybe an indication. You know, it's not a one-sided story. She was very objective in what she was doing. Of course, that will be scrutinized, the database will be scrutinized, and the commission might go deeper into that, because that was one of the core allegations of General Mkhwanazi, and they tried to corroborate it. And of course, if they can't corroborate it, it will not be taken up in the recommendations. And the second thing that she was very clear on is the successes of the task team. And based on the success the successes and why they were so successful, she explained how a task team is put together and how the investigators, that is a multidisciplinary task team. So in that task team, you don't just have your detectives. You've got your forensic analysts. You've got your other specialists that are there as well. And then you've got your prosecutors. And what happens normally with a case, and that is important to understand, the norm in South Africa, when you are a detective, when you receive a case file or a docket, you will start to investigate it. Every week, you will hand it into your commander. Your commander will peruse it. He will make some recommendations, give you some directions. And every week, you will then investigate, or your investigator's diary will be written up until you believe that you've got a complete case now. Your commander will sign it off, and then it will go to the NPA. Then the NPA will look at it and it will decide whether it's got a prima facie case. It can either accept it or it can make some recommendations and give some instructions for the detective to go back for further investigation. Now, that can happen over a period of even years. So by the time that docket reaches the prosecutor, it can be a year or 2 years. Now the detective has to go back all the way 2 years ago, go and get some additional statements and additional investigations. But when you have the prosecution-guided investigation, every day they sit together and they give you real-time updates and instructions and make sure that the case is built in order that by the time you have completed your investigation, that docket is ready for court.
I just want to go to what's happening behind the scenes now. I think both you and I are aware of attempts to discredit General Makwanazi. And just this very morning, we saw a top secret affidavit in which an accusation was made against him. In your opinion, what is happening here?
Yeah, I think it is normal for a lot of noise and a lot of propaganda on both sides to strengthen your case. Because as I said, you know, this is not a court of law. They are open to a lot of other things that they can also bring into consideration. They can even accept hearsay evidence in the court. So and that opens the door for people on both sides of the line to resort to propaganda. I think the gloves are off. And a top secret affidavit. I haven't seen one in my life before. So that just begs to ask a question. And the accusations that are being made. But we saw that when the minister the caretaker minister was appointed and the president announced the commission, there was already attempts to try to use platforms to discredit the other side from the one side to the other side. So it is nothing new, but I think after these 2 weeks or week and a half of testimony, some damning evidence was tabled. And I think now it's going to heat up. Maybe on both sides, we will have to see. And it's early days. Of course, remember, we only saw now what the Makwanazi camp, if I can call it that, have tabled. And they have not done, because we believe tomorrow General Khumalo will testify. So that is going to be more interesting as well, because he's going to bring, I think, more of your operational dynamics into that, because he headed the task team. So then we will move away from the legal perspective now to the operational perspective. And so I believe the gloves will be off. And at the end of the day, it is very important to cut through the noise and look at the facts. And of course, whenever you want to make an allegation and you want to table some evidence, that evidence will be corroborated. It will be investigated, especially if it is controversial or damning evidence. And we believe that the commissioner will do that. They can appoint investigators to investigate. They can even make a recommendation while it is sitting for further criminal investigation on matters. So that is what we have to wait and see. What was going to happen on Monday based on the events of this weekend.
Well, Willem, there is a lot at stake here. What about allegations of police capture and links with very wealthy criminals?
Yeah, it's very interesting because, you know, you've got various parallel processes that are ongoing now. We've got the commission that is investigating. It's a fact-finding commission. They will come up with recommendations and so on. And then we anticipate that there might be an internal tribunal that might start any day now with General Subia, because it has got nothing to do, the two processes, it's got nothing to do with each other, so they can continue with the tribunal of General Subia. So that will be very interesting. And then we've got the Kat Matlala case that has been mentioned, that is coming before court. And also the Mokgosi case. So there are various cases now, and we believe that there might be more arrests that will take place during the tenure of this commission. That will actually complicate it, because you know it's actually not parallel processes, and the one does not really inform the other, but it informs us. And then what's very interesting is your parliamentary ad hoc committee. That's going to sit with a lot of controversy already there with the fighting of who's going to be on the panel and the recusal and the conflict of interest and everything that is being discussed there. So it makes it a very interesting process.
Mm-hmm. Do you think by the end of this commission, the heart of darkness will have been laid bare, or do you think the chest will be sewn up?
you know, based on experience with other commissions of inquiry, unfortunately, there's not a very good track record about implementation of recommendations, or a very slow implementation or selective implementation. So I would hope that that lessons have been learned, and that there will be some adherence to some of the, at least some of the recommendations, but also that the commission will actually commission some further investigations into criminal cases, but also that that the recommendations in terms of to clarify the gray areas that actually led to this thing. What is the minister's mandate? Because, you know, section 206 and 207 of the constitution, it's actually very clear in some cases, in some instances, what does the minister do and what does the national commissioner do. But there's some gray areas that were exposed, and that's open to interpretation. So we believe that there might be some recommendations on that side as well that that might be done. But at the end of the day, I think the hope of South Africa is that we get to the bottom of this, and that this can be the first step in starting to take back our streets from criminals, and taking and the restoration of the rule of law.
Thank you, Willem. Earlier, I spoke to Ronaldo Goos about his re-entry into politics. Welcome, Ronaldo.
Hi, Chris, and hi to all the viewers. I hope that you are having a wonderful Sunday.
Thank you. Some might say it is a long walk from the Democratic Alliance to the Freedom Front Plus. Tell us what led you there.
Yes. So I'm, look, let me start at the beginning. I think everybody knows that my membership with the DA was terminated because of a 15-year-old video that was completely taken out of context. We know that the Federal Legal Commission that investigated me for 3 months came out and ultimately said that I should return back to Parliament. And then the federal executive of the DA in one day decided to overturn that decision from the FLC. Apparently, it was unanimous. I heard differently. I heard that it was only by one vote that they managed to do that. But, you know, that is when my journey with the Democratic Alliance ended. And now, looking back a year later, what a blessing in disguise. And let me explain why. The reason it's a blessing in disguise is because I'm not sure how I would have been able to defend the DA in 2025. After the Bello Act being implemented, NHI being implemented, Expropriation Act being implemented, these are all things that the DA campaigned against in the 2024 municipal elections. Oh, sorry, the national elections. I know that they say now, oh, you know, but these things were part of the Sixth administration. But my question is then, why did you campaign on it? Why did you lie to your voters? So ultimately, we are where we are now. You know, at the moment, it was a massive shock to me. I really thought that I had a lot to offer in Parliament. I would have asked the difficult questions. I would have been unapologetic about it. And ultimately, that was cut short. And then immediately after the termination, I was approached by different political parties. And I said, whoa, I just need to take a little bit of a break. Ek moet 'n bietjie aandag aan myself gee, my familie gee, en ek moet 'n bietjie dink oor wat in my lewe aangaan. And that is when I started giving my all to, you know, my YouTube channel and my social media. And what that has shown me over the last year is that whatever is said in mainstream media does not mean that that is the truth. Because if you listen to social media, it would be as if the entire South Africa was against me and nobody was for me. Well, let me tell you something. I've gained more friends during this last year than what I've had before. I've gained more people on my social media channels than ever before. And ultimately, throughout this year, I started looking at the different political parties and their manifestos. I looked at what they stood for. And, you know, we've had some conversations. I had conversations with the local Freedom Front Plus councillors over here. I will mention Bill Harrington because he was fundamental in all of this. So thank you, Bill. Then eventually, I had a discussion with Corne Mulder and Die Dagbestuur. And ultimately, what came out of it is, you know, I looked at the values, I looked at the principles that they had. And this was also in February when Corne Mulder was elected as the leader. I was very motivated by the fact that there's this new leader within the Freedom Front Plus. Now, don't get me wrong. Pieter Groenewald is doing a phenomenal job. Oom Piet is doing a great job as a minister. But I'm happy that Corné Mulder is the leader, because it just infuses the party with some new, you know, viewpoints and a way of approaching, you know, politics in South Africa. So a lot of people then, you know, said, Ronaldo, so what are you planning? And ultimately, the announcement came out, I believe it was on Tuesday this week. That is when the announcement came out. And, you know, a lot of people have asked and said, Ronaldo, are you now given a position? Are you given this and that? Ultimately, this is what, when I met with Corné, this is what stood out to me from the beginning. It was, we almost at the same time said, I don't want a position. You're not being gifted a position. It was almost like we both were thinking the same things, because the last thing that I want to do is jump to a political party and just get into a cozy seat, because then I'm no different to all the people that I used to criticize over the years, you know, the flip-floppers. I believe that I need to prove myself, and I'm willing to do that. I'm going to be on the ground level in Nelson Mandela Bay, working to get more support for the Freedom Front Plus, and also to speak about this massive misconception that people in South Africa have when it comes to conservatism in South Africa. Because the mainstream media and so many people have painted conservatism in a negative light, tried to make it seem like it's this evil ideology, when in actual fact, I can ask you the following questions. Do you believe in God? If you do, you're a little bit conservative. Do you believe that a family is the fundamental aspect of who you become when you get older? You might be a little bit conservative. Are you a proud South African? Not of the government, but of the country and what we can offer. Meaning, do you support the Springboks? Do you support the Proteas? Do you support Bafana Bafana? If the answer is yes, then guess what? You might be a little bit conservative. And then lastly, the freedoms that we enjoy. The freedom of speech, freedom of movement, freedom of association. If you value those principles and those rights, guess what? You might be a little bit conservative. But because of mainstream media driving this narrative of, oh, conservatism is for crumptus and it's all these negative things, no. So I want to go out there and tell people it's perfectly fine to be conservative. Look at what happened in the United States with Charlie Kirk. He was sitting there speaking facts and he was shot dead by a woke leftist because he couldn't argue his points and his facts. And I'm not sure if you saw, Chris, the memorial service of Charlie Kirk. That gave me goosebumps. And, you know, that just confirmed to me that I'm joining a political party that espouses those same values and principles. And ultimately, it also just showed that there is a lot of space in South Africa for conservatism. 85% of South Africa is religious. That means that 85% of South Africa shows at least some semblance of conservatism. Now, you don't have to just be a conservative. You can also be, you know, a center-left, center-right individual. That is where I find myself. I'm centrist. I'm right-leaning on some issues and a little bit left-leaning on other issues. So I know I'm giving you a very long explanation, but I want to make sure that people know that this is not flip-flopping. Remember, I was kicked out of my previous party. But then again, I'm also now not in it to get revenge, because then I will be making the same mistake as the ANC and the government of this country that keeps on looking to the past and not focusing on the future. I have no issues with the people in the DA. My issues are with the leadership structure and what is happening to the DA. But guess what? That's no longer my problem. My problem now is to focus on the Freedom Front Plus, to support Corné Mulder, and to drive the fact home that we want to get more support and that people should be able to vote for us, because they need to know who we truly are and not what mainstream media tells people we are.
Thank you, Ronaldo. That was the NDB Sunday Show with me, Christine.